What's up, Dream Warriors? Welcome back to another episode of a podcast on Elm Street. We are your hosts, Mark.
And Brooke.
And this week we are coming at you with Brooke's pick of the month of whatever month we're in. Well, I don't know. I get well, it'd be May. May. I'm all fucked up because we're recording like a week early. So yeah, it'll be the first pick of May, and you chose Perfect Blue from 1997. Tickled your fancy with this one. Why did you want to pick this movie?
I don't know. It's been on my watch list for a while and is on a couple lists on Letterboxd, and heard it's the most disturbing and fucked up animated movie, and a very important animated movie, so paid to give it a shot, you know.
Okay. Do you have some insight on why it's important, or is that going to be discussed?
I don't know,
Okay.
but I mean,
All right. Okay.
1997, you know, I guess there was Miyazaki. I guess he would have had movies out by now, but I don't think any of like the Japanese or Korean animated movies or shows really kind of hit the mainstream at this point, I don't think.
That's true. Very true. All right. So yeah, like you mentioned, it is an animated movie, and this is our first animated movie that we've done on this podcast.
Yep.
There's not a lot of horror animated movies, so I guess
No.
it's kind of understandable, but pretty cool pick nonetheless. I was happy that you picked it because yeah, it's been on my list too. It's on the IMDb top 250, I think. And it's also on like the top 100 animated films of all time. So we kind of knocked off two of them with that. So,
And for anyone that says it's not horror, it's on Shudder, therefore it is horror.
yeah, fuck's sakes. And I mean, if you haven't watched this, there's a creepy, very creepy dude in this movie.
Yeah.
He's got a face, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Before we talk about this too much more, we're not going to do any news or 4Ks on this episode just because we're recording it so far in advance. So everything's going to be kind of null by the time this episode drops.
Yeah.
But we'll go back to our early days and just talk about what we're drinking and what we watched.
All right, let's
I
do
guess
it.
kick the news part.
So I'm still drinking my Heinekens,
Nice.
still kicking. Yeah.
I'm being weird tonight. I really wanted just some lemon water. And I was like, well, that's
Okay.
boring for the podcast. So I put vodka in it. It tastes pretty good.
Nice.
Not bad. Like a unsweetened alcoholic lemonade.
Fair enough.
It's that vodka that Ben and Nancy told us about. So
Oh,
it's
yes.
good.
It's legit.
The Russian potato vodka. Y'all done pouring?
Yeah, waiting for you.
Waiting for me. I was just... what'd you watch this week?
I actually watched a few things this week. Trying to watch some new movies and some horror movies, so I watched The Beekeeper
Yes.
from this year. Fantastically horrendous movie. It's not good, but I just had a great time with it. The story is just absolutely ridiculous. The dialogue is, yeah, not good, but just you get to see Jason the Statham kick ass.
Oh, it's good.
Watched another movie on the IMDb list, Bicycle Thieves. It was okay. I don't know. It was all right. Yeah.
Has that been on what the IMDb list for a while?
That has, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Really? I feel like I've never seen it on there.
Yeah. And then with all these twisters that have been happening in the States, I was like, oh, I'll throw in the new twisters, and then come to see that doesn't come until July. So I was like, all right, I'll just watch the OG. And yeah, it's been a few years since I've seen it, and yeah, it's so good, just the nostalgia and stuff. Yeah. And then I was browsing Shudder and I saw this movie on there called The Third Saturday in October, Part 5, and it was like 2023. I was like, oh, a new horror movie, and then look up and I see on there there's the third Saturday in October, and I was like, all right, well, that's weird. Why, where's 2, 3, and four?
I know, I was wondering that myself.
And then look up and yeah, I guess they didn't make it 2, 3, and 4. They just kind of imagined it. And
Yeah.
I'll probably watch like this, I guess, the sequel to this. But yeah, it was decent, better than I thought, honestly.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? Did you watch this before?
No, I haven't, but it's definitely one that's caught my eye a couple times, and mainly because of the whole part five thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, because there's only 1 year between the first one and part five. So I was like, what the fuck is going on with this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I did see that you had watched it, and I was like, okay, 2.5 stars. It's not terrible.
Yeah. The one girl like reminds me so much of Sherry Moon Zombie on Thousand Corpses, like just
Yeah.
her style. And it's also an African American killer, which we don't really see that often.
That a spoiler alert or
No, not really.
okay.
He doesn't wear a mask in the movie, so
Okay.
yeah.
That's cool then.
Yeah. What about you?
As for me, I finally bought a proper 4K player, so I'm gonna start going through my stack of 4Ks that I just haven't watched since I bought them. So I watched Prey, and that was my favorite or second favorite movie of 2022. I can't remember, but anyways, I fucking love this movie, and watching it in 4K with like sound system and shit, it was just so good.
Nice.
And then you and I talked about this a little while back, like how on Letterboxd I have these collections, like movie collections,
Yeah.
and we have so many of them that are unfinished, like just with one movie left that we need to watch and shit like that. So I watched Batman and Robin to finish the pre-Nolan Batman movies.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, there was the four of them in that. There was obviously Batman Begin, or Batman Returns, Batman Forever, and then Batman and Robin. And man, this movie is Jesus Christ.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but
It's so cheesy. Like, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's so fucking cheesy, man.
yeah.
And then me and the boys watched Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Nice.
It's been a minute since I've watched it. It was fun. I had a good time with it.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, good time. I'm on episode 4 of Fallout, hoping to get another episode out
Nice.
tonight after we record. Wicked show though. Like, if anybody listening hasn't started it or watched it all yet, I
Yeah.
highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I finished Monarch finally. Binged the rest of that
Yeah.
yesterday, and yeah, so I guess it is all connected with like the movie universe.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So I guess this show takes place after Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's good.
Neat. Yeah, I've only watched the first episode of that, but I like how they've kind of, it's like in a world where people are just accepting that these monsters are here now.
Yeah.
Like, they just have signs up, like because if you're down in Florida and they have like crocodile crossing signs, it's just like fucking kaiju crossing here. And it's, I don't know, I just thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we can start talking about this movie.
Cool.
All right, like we said in the intro, this week we're talking about Perfect Blue from 1997. This was your pick of the month. Starting off with the synopsis, a pop singer gives up her career to become an actress, but she slowly goes insane when she starts being stalked by an obsessed fan and what seems to be a ghost of her past. This was directed by Satoshi Kon, who also did Paprika, which is another movie that's on these top lists that are on
Great.
Letterboxd.
Yeah.
The cast list, I mean, I don't really recognize the names, but there's some pretty prominent voice actors and actresses in this movie. Starting off is Junko Iwa, and she played Mima. She's in Attack on Titan, the Evangelion movies, Tales of Hysteria, the video game, and Hunter x Hunter. Rika Matsumoto, who played Rumi, she is the voice of Ash in Pokemon.
No way.
Yeah.
That's
I
crazy.
thought that was really cool. So yeah, like every movie, TV show, like everything that Ash is in, she's done his voice.
Wow.
Shinpachi Tsuji played Tadokoro. Koro. He's in Wo Long, the video game.
Okay, yeah.
Also Starfield. And I don't know what these are, but I had to put them in just for the fucking titles alone, man.
Okay.
The first one, That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, the movie.
Apparently, that anime is actually really good.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a fucking wild ass name. And the next one is My Isekai Life. I gained a second character class and became the strongest sage in the world.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Is a mouthful. That's all I have for him. And then Masaki Okura played Uchida, and I don't know if that's a male or a female, but they were in Akira, another animated Japanese movie. And that's all I have. I don't know who Uchida is as in the movie, but they were in the top billing, so I put them on. They've just punched my mic. Do you have honorable mentions?
No, not really, no.
What do you mean? This is a movie that's full of them.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this one. I know you're excited.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where to start with this movie. It's first of all, what do you think of like the animation style? Like at first you could tell it was like 97, but then once I first it like you get into it, like it didn't really bother me at all.
Yeah, it's a weird animation style. Like, I'm not a big anime guy. I know that you are, but like, I don't know if this is like typical anime. Well, no, it's not really, because like a lot of animes, like they have big eyes and like it's like very bright colors and shit like that.
Yeah.
This one, yeah, I don't know. It almost felt like a low budget animation.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It kind of made me feel like I was watching Sailor Moon again.
Yeah. That's a good point. It was
Yeah.
kind of like that.
But yeah, movie opens up and I think we got the Power Rangers or something. They're
Yeah, it was wild.
up on the stage. We meet Mima. She is, I don't know if she's the lead in this kind of girl group called CHAM, CHAM. But she is doing her last show as a singer. And right off the bat, one thing I absolutely loved about this movie was the editing and the way that the director put in different scenes of the movie. Because at the start, we see her doing the show, she's singing, and then it'll cut to her like after the show, she's just doing her own thing, like at the grocery store. And then it like cuts back to her singing, and then cuts back to like the grocery store and walking like across the road. And it just gets you right into that feeling like, okay, someone's like following her or something.
Yeah. Yeah, because whenever it cuts to the concert too, there's like a weird dude in the crowd, kind of like videotaping the whole thing, and you can tell that like something's up with him. He's not normal, not just like the way that he looks, but like I don't know, like he's got like stalker vibes for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if he like actually was a security guard for the concert, but it kind of seems like he might just put on different acts to get closer to her, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought it was her mom and dad, but it's actually I think like her agents, I guess.
Yeah.
So Rumi, and I think the other one is Tad Okoro. They're very different, and Tadakoro is, typical. I don't know how to like say this right, but
Rumi.
in Japanese culture, like men are kind of put, especially in the late 90s, right? They were kind of, they looked down on a woman a lot. So like Tadakoro doesn't really care about Mima. He just cares about like the money and all that. Whereas Rumi, she cares about Mima and stuff like that. And I don't know if we should just say what happens at the end of the movie, because I feel like it will kind of be a good breakdown for like the movie.
I was gonna say before we kick into that, like Rumi wants Mima to like keep, because like she's in this J-pop group, right? And their whole persona is like innocent, kind of like frilly dresses and like tutus and shit like that. So Rumi kind of wants to keep Mima in that sort of image, even when she's an actress. Whereas Tadakoro, like how you mentioned, he just wants the money, and it doesn't matter what the role is. Like if it's gonna make you a bigger star, just take that role, like no matter what it is. And we do see that in the one that she has to take, but.
And there's one thing in this little conversation that I heard, and then I didn't really think about it for the whole movie until the very end of the movie, where you find out that Rumi is actually the stalker, or is one of the people that is tormenting Mima and killing people. And in this little interaction, you find out that Rumi was a former J-pop star.
I miss that.
Because Tadakoro kind of makes fun of her, like, oh, you just want to be in her shoes, like relive your life as a J-pop star.
Yeah. See, like, when we find out about Rumi at the end, it's fucked up. Like, it's twisted and shit. And, like, we've already dropped the ball. So, like, we find out that she's the one that's, like, been killing all these people. But if you look at the people that she's been killing, it's the people that are like that don't care about Mima's image, right? Like the photographer who's photographing her completely nude, like basically like a Japanese playboy. And then Tadakoro, who signs her up for a fucking rape scene in a movie. So like these are the type of people that she's killing. Like she's not just killing anybody, she's killing the people that are kind of tainting Mima's previous persona.
And there's one killing that, like, I'll save the details when we get to it, but yeah, when you find out like who did it, at that moment you're like, holy fuck, what the hell? And then the movie, you find out that it was Rumi, and you're like, wow. But there's one scene I really liked in this opening scene, is that the stalker is like at the front, and he's like holding up his hand, and he has Mima like in his hand, and like the like peripherals are all blurry. It's just her like dancing and like kind of singing to him, like he's thinking that, like, this is where he fell in love with her pretty much, right?
It's a really cool shot, like how like he has her in his hand. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
In this little scene, there's like some kind of guys, kids who are, act up whenever Mima and Cham, they do these shows. They start like throwing cans at people, and stuff like that, and they beat the shit out of the stalker guy, and then the one kid like is about to throw a can at Mima, and like the stalker just says like stop, and then they end up leaving stuff like that. And Mima finds out about like the internet and stuff like that.
Netscape Navigator
Yeah.
for all the people that were born before the year 2000.
But it's this domain that this guy created called Mima's Room. And I love the way that they cut back and forth, like with Mima saying stuff, and then like it cuts to like, I don't know, like them actually doing stuff, like the lines in this, like "Who are you?" is like huge thing in this. And then, you know, like I'm always looking at Mima's room whenever she's in her bedroom, and on this like chat room, it's like I'm always looking at Mima's room, and her blinds are wide open, and you just see from like afar her like white light, and then you're just like, I don't know, this is creepy.
It is creepy, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a blog, and it's someone who is like acting like her, like for fans to read kind of thing, but she's not the one doing it, but it's all stuff that like nobody would know except for her kind of thing. Like there was one part where the blog says like, "Oh, today I stepped off the subway with my left foot first, and I always try and make it a habit to step with my right foot for good luck." And she like kind of plays it off. She's like, "Ah-ha-ha, like this person really knows me." And then like the more she reads, the it progressively gets creepier and creepier. 'Cause it's like, today I was at the grocery store and I bought fucking, I don't know, apples and they were green and shit like that. And it's just like, how the fuck?
And she gets a fax. I mean, it just says like traitor, traitor, traitor. So do you think that was Rumi that was doing all these things?
I think so. Because Rumi's kind of like living vicariously through Mima, right? She's a washed up J-pop star now that I know that. So she's, I don't know. I feel like she wanted Mima to do what she wasn't able to do for life and career.
Which is crazy because it's like this creepy guy that looks fucked up.
Looks like Sloth from Goonies.
He does, yeah. Like he is kind of like the bad guy in this, but like we don't know how what he's doing exactly. Like he's the one that's writing this blog, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
Or is it Rumi?
That I don't know, like it could be either one of them.
Yeah, I mean it probably is him because you see him in his like fucking little apartment and typing away and all that.
Yeah, 'cause he goes by Me Mania or something like that. So yeah, I like he's obviously someone that Rumi has hired, I think, to kind of tail her.
Oh, really?
I think, I don't know, maybe not.
That'd be pretty fucked up, yeah.
It just like, why does she have two? Right?
So she started her first day on the set, and her first and only line that she is doing is, "Who are you?" And another thing I love about this movie is the way they connect the TV show that she's acting in to the real life, where at some points I thought her life was actually the TV show.
I did too. It threw me for a loop a few times.
I was like, right now, I was like, okay, so she's doing this and this and this. And then you see, like, I think her name is Aerie, I think, is like the lead actress. And you're like, oh, it's just part of the show because she's being, at one point, she's being interrogated. And you're like, well, yeah, she is losing her mind. So it makes sense. But it's like, oh, no, like, that's just the TV show. But
Yeah.
like, is it the TV show?
Yeah, that's true. Makes you wonder, like, which.
So Aerie is like, she's like the Mima version, but like the actress, like everyone like writes letters to her and stuff like that, and wants to take a picture. She gets a bunch of fan mail, and then like one of the, is it Uchida, the writer?
Oh, is that who Uchida is?
I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe I think so. But anyway, there's a writer who gets all these letters, and he's like, oh, like this one letter isn't for you. And I think at this point Mima is like ready to say her first lines, and then Mr. Yadorora opens the letter, and it just fucking explodes. And then like in the letter it says like, this is a warning, the next one will be real. And like, did not see that coming. He's like fucked on the ground, like blood everywhere. He's not dead, but like fucked him up, right? So Mima ends up getting a new computer, and she ends up finding Mima's room, and it's all about her, like very, very detailed. And like at this point, she's like starting to get into that zone where she's kind of losing it a bit, and she's on the set, and her one line is like, "Who are you?" And she just keeps repeating the line, trying to remember it. But like, she's also like in her real life, she's trying to like figure out who are you, and it's kind of fucking with her head, right?
Yeah, because she's still like, I feel like she still wants to be a singer, or like she misses that aspect of her life kind of thing. Because she's not as famous now as she was, right? Like she's only in one show, she has one line. Like,
And Cham is actually starting to blow up because there's only two of them in it, and they didn't add a third person.
because there's the one scene. And like her agents are still Cham's agents. So she's in there meeting with the agents. And then like the two girls that are still in Cham are in the other room, like celebrating because they hit like 83 on the billboards or something like that.
So yeah, the guys are talking about Mima not getting enough screen time. They're trying to, get her some more screen time. The stalker is listening in. And then Mima goes into the elevator, and you see a picture on in the elevator of someone who got killed in a hit and run, and it was the gangster kid from the beginning of the movie that died. The stalker is pretending to be paparazzi to kind of get more pictures of her. And then this one scene that just took me by surprise of how far they fucking went. And like, I don't know what the rating is of this movie, but like, it's gotta be R, right?
I would assume. It's not rated, actually.
Oh shit, okay. So Mima is kind of in a meeting with Rumi and Tadakoro. And in the show, there was a scene that came up of her possibly getting some more screen time. And so the scene is a rape scene that she is going to be taking a part in. And immediately, obviously, if Rumi is like, no, like she's not doing that. Like, she's a new actress. All the shit's happening. And then Tadakoro, not really like paying attention at all to anybody, but he's just like, oh, it'll be fine, stuff like that. Yeah, immediately I was like, that's not a good idea. And the scene happens, and just fucking wild. So she is like plays a stripper, and she's like on like the main stage, and all these guys around her, and she's dancing, taking off her clothes, and then the guys start to like try and get at her, and security is trying to get them off, but the guys kind of overpower, and then one gets on the stage, and he like rips her shirt off, like she's not like bare chest, but puts her down, her like head's hanging back, and then he's on top of her, like about to rape her, and then the director's just like, oh, cut, we need to adjust the lighting. And they like adjust the cameras and stuff, and the guy like on top of it is like, oh, he's like, I'm so sorry, like, you know, I'll try and make this quick, like, I apologize. And she's just like, oh, it's okay. But like, I don't think she realizes how much this is gonna fuck with her.
Yeah, because this is a pretty fucking hefty scene. Like,
Yeah.
it's an animated movie, but I mean the content is still there, and it's like yeah, it was kind of hard to watch, really.
And you see in the background as they're filming, like everyone's watching the scene, obviously. And Rumi and Tadakura were like back there. Rumi is like fucking broken. She is like trying not to look and think about it, and she just starts bawling. And
Yeah.
Tadakura's just like there, like not even watching the scene. He's just like, you know, fucking fooling around on his phone or something like that. And Rumi's like bawling her eyes out. He gets up and leaves. And yeah, that. I did not expect that at all. So now she is obviously starting to lose her mind a bit. She gets back to her apartment and she sees that her fish are dead, or she envisions that her fish have died. She didn't want to do the rape scene. And she starting to kind of doubt herself. And now this is where the movie gets into that psychological thriller that everyone says it is, and
Yeah.
oh boy, it really is.
Yeah.
So she is starting to see her past self, or the real Mima, who is the Mima that is from the beginning, who is dressed in like, I don't know, the stage clothes, like, you know,
She's wearing like a little tutu and
her
like
hair's all
innocent.
done up and stuff
Yeah.
like that. And you know, she's no longer a pop idol. The old Mima is like saying like, oh, you're not a pop idol anymore, like I'm the real pop idol. She says like, all I'll always be in the light and you'll be in the shadows. I really like that line. And so she's starting to lose her mind a bit. And also another aspect of this movie I really liked is the deeper she gets into this like psychosis. I don't know if you noticed it, but her room gets messier and messier.
Yeah, I did notice that.
And a lot of people compared this movie to Black Swan.
Yeah, I saw that in the
And
trivia too.
also Aronofsky took a lot from this movie for, well, he did Black Swan, right?
Yeah, and Requiem for
And
a Dream.
yeah, Requiem for a Dream. Which kind of goes to show like how much this movie kind of made an impact on people.
Yeah, it was influential for sure.
Do you want to get into the our first kill of the movie?
What was the first one? Was that
The
Tadakura?
writer, no, the writer in
Oh, Uchida.
the parking lot.
Right here in the parking lot.
Like Uchida, it was in like the parking garage.
I have to refresh my memory on
All right.
that one.
So
Trying to remember.
Uchida is in the parking garage. He's like down by himself and he hears like some noises and he's like, oh, how are they doing there? And then the elevator opens up and the radio is in there playing like Cham's music. He goes up to it and all of a sudden the elevator doors open again. He's just like laying in the elevator, fucking blood everywhere, his eyes are gone.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I missed the first, like I remember the elevator doors opening and him being dead, but I missed the first part of it.
Yeah. Now Mima is doing a photo shoot. She's doing a very rated R photo shoot. You see everything in this photo
Yeah, I wasn't
shoot, you know.
expecting that.
You see some bush, which did not expect to see that. I love the scene of the stalker buying all the magazines of her.
Yeah, he goes up to this like a newspaper stand, and all these guys are like kind of huddled around it.
Yeah.
And then you just see him kind of freak out a little bit. And then it shows him back at his apartment, and there's just stacks of magazines all over the place.
Yeah, he just like grabs the magazines from the guys looking at it and just buys every single thing. And then you see him in his apartment. There's all these pictures of Mima there. And then you actually see Mima there, like not the real one, but the one that she envisions, like the old one, right? And he says, this is where he says, like, oh, I'm Mr. Meme Mania. Mima is like telling him to kill her, get rid of her, and he says, like, yeah, I'll get rid of her.
See, that's why I thought like that he was someone that Rumi hired.
Yeah.
Was because of this scene.
Yeah, makes sense.
So like she's coming to him as the old Mima
Yeah.
and telling him to kill the new version of herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I don't get about this movie, I was thinking about it at the end. Every time we see the, I don't know, what fake Mima. Every time we see her, she like has the same body structure as the original one.
Yeah.
But then like at the end, whenever real Mima and fake Mima are fighting, we like and Rumi, like she's a bigger girl. Like she's not like a petite little thing. So like how is she pulling this off with nobody realizing?
Because I think because Rumi is dressed as the old Mima,
Yeah.
and the new Mima is trying to envision herself as the old Mima. She wants to get back there. So she's just kind of seeing this I want to say cartoon character, but it actually is a cartoon character. But like in the apartment, whenever Mima is in there trying to kill Mima, and she like run away, and you see like the old Mima like bouncing off like the telephone street lights. Like obviously that's not Rumi doing it. I think it's just Mima, I don't know, trying to, like she's lost her mind, man. Yeah. But yeah, Mima is visiting Cham at the radio station. She ends up seeing the idol again, and yeah, she's trying to chase her through the thing, and then she ends up cutting her hand on some glass. She's having like a ton of dreams again. I thought the murderer was like someone that she like imagined, almost.
Yeah, like something out of the show.
Yeah, because like the TV show is so intertwined with the movie, like we said before, like you almost forget like what is real and what's not, like what's part of the show she's acting on, because like the show is like talking about like you're interviewing Mima, and the doctors are like, oh yeah, she has multiple personality disorder, right? And you're like, okay, yeah, she probably does. But then it's like, okay, cut. And it's like, but she actually does. Right?
They did a really good job at almost like putting us in her shoes in a sense, right? Like, because she doesn't know what's real anymore. And us watching the movie, we don't know what's fucking real anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of like I don't know, kind of making us feel like we're kind of losing it a little bit too.
Yeah, exactly. So now Tadakoro orders some pizza. Pizza guy comes. You see him in his hat. He got some pizza, and Tadakoro is just like, "You're acting really weird, pizza guy." And then fucking out of nowhere pulls out this screwdriver or ice pick,
Yeah.
stabs him in the eye, and I was like, "What the fuck?" Crazy scene.
Death was brutal because he stabs him a shit ton after that too.
Yeah.
It's like Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct.
Yeah. And then this part just I like audibly was like, what the fuck? Because you see the person under the pizza guy, and you're like, oh, it's the stalker. And then it's fucking Mima, and I was like, what the hell is happening? Which like can make sense because Mima probably would kill him because he was the one that suggested she do that rape scene. But you find out that it was Rumi that did this. But like when I saw her, I was like so confused. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, because you don't find out about Rumi until after all these killings happen. Like, you find out about her in like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Because then Mima goes home and you see like Mima like in the fish tank, like the old one, like still kind of like bugging her. And then she looks in the closet and you see all the bloody clothes. And you're like, oh shit, like what the fuck? And there actually was something for the bring up, but Mima is like getting interrogated, and she says to the area, whatever, maybe that truck hit me and this is all a dream. Because before, in one of her kind of like dream psychosis, she is crossing the road and the stalker ends up hitting her with a truck. And it's like, I didn't think of that. Maybe she actually is dead, you know? Yeah, so they're done filming the show now. And, you know, at this point, you're like, okay, what's going on? Is the stalker actually doing this? Is it like all in her head? And then you see she's backstage at the set where like the rape scene happened, and the stalker is there, and he ends up attacking her and tying up her. He like beats the fuck out of her, actually. But he ends up tying her feet, and then she's like in the same position as like the rape was, and she like grabs his hammer and just swings and smashes him in the side of the head, and kills him, obviously. But like I didn't know if any of this happened.
Yeah, I didn't know either while it was happening.
Yeah. So she leaves this guy, ends up going back to her apartment, and then the old Mima is there, but like it's act she's actually there because she's trying to kill the real Mima. And like this whole scene is just crazy of the old Mima trying to stab her. She does end up stabbing Mima a couple of times.
Yeah, she stabs her in the shoulder with a knife, and then she gets her in the side with a fucking umbrella, the sharp end of the umbrella. Like, holy fuck.
And then like she falls like off this fucking thing, like she's shouting, there's people there, but they don't like hear, it's like nighttime. They fall like down this like probably 20-foot drop under these garbage bags, and then the Mima's trying to kill her. She like runs into this kind of glass wall, and all those glass breaks, and then you see that it's Rumi dressed as the Mima, and you're like, what the fuck? Did not see that coming.
She takes the mask off in this scene, right?
And you see that like she's kind of like a bigger, right? She's a bit chubbier and stuff like that.
Yeah, like the persona now is kind of gone because she's taken that mask off. So you can see her for her true self.
And then they're kind of fighting, and then Rumi ends up like trying to tackle her or like grab something, and she falls on like the broken glass and like stabs herself. They both end up getting hit by a truck.
See, I love this scene because Rumi goes out into the road and you see this truck coming, but it's nighttime, so all you can see are the lights. And she kind of stands up as if these are like stage lights, and like kind of holds her arms out a little bit, like as if she's up on stage. And then Mima like tackles her out of the way. But I think, yeah, I think the truck still does hit Rumi, at least. I don't know if it hits Mima, but
Yeah, I don't think it was like very hard, but yeah.
yeah.
Then for final scene, Rumi is in a kind of psych hospital. She's trying to be her old self again, and you see Mima talking to like the doctors, asking her like, oh, how's Rumi doing? Like, who is she today? Stuff like this. So now Rumi has like this multiple personality disorder, right? Where she is also Rumi, but she's also trying to be Mima, and it's craziness.
I like the final line in the movie too, because she gets into her car And she looks at herself in the mirror and says, "I'm the real Mima Kirigo," and then drives away.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
Cool.
Don't think so.
Alrighty. Well, that's the way the blood splatters.
Okay. All right. How did you rate this movie?
Well, you're semi letterbox score, but
I did, but nobody else
that's
has.
true. For story, I gave it a 5, 10 out of 10, not 5 out of 5.
Was like, what the fuck?
10 out of 10. I absolutely love this movie. I said in my letterbox score that this movie changed me. I just think this is honestly probably the greatest animated psychological thriller. I mean, there's probably not many for it to compete with, but even just in general, like, this movie had my mind in a fucking blender. I love the characters. I love the different stories and ways that you it made your mind go and think of what could this mean. Like, I'm definitely gonna watch this movie again. It's only 80 minutes, so it's a very quick watch. Quality also gave it a 10 out of 10. I just think the animation is great. I think it still holds up. Like, I don't know if there's any 4K or Blu-ray releases for this movie,
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
yeah, I love this animation style. I thought the voice acting was good. I thought that the wasn't really any like songs in it, like just your classic, Japanese animated songs, but
So annoying. I'm sorry. It's just so annoying.
yeah, just a really fucking well-made movie. It's one of my favorites now. So,
All right.
yeah.
Cool.
How about you?
I didn't love it as much as you. I gave the story an 8 out of 10. I feel like it's a very good psychological thriller, and it did, I already mentioned it, but it did a great job at kind of making you feel like you're kind of losing your mind as well. You don't really know what's going on. Like you mentioned, like your mind was in a blender the whole time. And I think that's a good way to describe it. It's like you don't know what's real while you're watching this movie at all. But there are some parts where I don't know, it kind of got to be a little bit too much, and like I was getting confused. But also, this is a movie that would most definitely benefit on a second watch, where you can kind of pick up on the little things that you're probably missing on your first watch. And I definitely think it does deserve a second, third, fourth, fifth watch. Like I think it's good enough for that. Quality, I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10. I didn't like the animation style as much. I don't know, it just, like I already said, it just felt kind of like low budgety a little bit.
Fair.
But yeah, the voice acting was fine. The really like high-pitched voices and shit like that, it drives me crazy. Maybe that's why I'm not like a big anime person. And the music, I already said while you were talking, like fucking J-pop drives me nuts, man. Like I can't handle that shit. And like Baby Metal, that band, I don't understand how they have fans, dude. I can't fucking handle that shit. That's just me. It's just my personal thought.
Fair.
But yeah, I mean, I do think it's a good movie. And I think I will probably bump my score up on a second or third watch. But like, I can definitely understand why it's on these lists that it's on. Yeah. 8 out of 10 and a 7 out of 10 for me.
Nice.
All right, you guys know our scores. We'll head on over to Rotten Tomatoes and see what they've scored it. Starting off with the critics' consensus. I just fucking went back to the start of the episode. The critics' consensus. A mysterious figure stalks a pop star. What the fuck is this? Is this the consensus? I copied and pasted it. Hold on. Let me go to Rotten Tomatoes because that doesn't sound like a consensus at all. That sounds more like a plot. Trailer for Mufasa dropped today. Yeah, that is. Oh no. Oh, that's what I did.
What'd you do?
Rotten Tomatoes like changed their format on their website a little bit. So like it has the scores, and then underneath the scores, it has the plot synopsis. And then the critics' consensus is like halfway down the page. Okay. The critics' consensus: Perfect Blue is over-stylized, but its core mystery is always compelling, as are the visual theatrics. So based on that, what do you think the critics scored it?
But now this is a very highly rated movie, so we'll say 93.
83.
Okay.
That's on 17 reviews and an average score of 7.2 out of 10. And
Yeah, that's yeah. I gotta keep remembering like the critics' reviews are like from when it first comes out, right? Pretty much.
The audience rating is an 89% on 10,000 ratings and an average score of 4.1 out of 5 or an 8.2 out of 10. So highly regarded in the audience section.
Letterboxd is a 4.4 out of 5.
It's
My
really high.
friend's rating is a 4.3. I know there's a couple of her friends who have actually reviewed it. Here Be Monster, Anthony gave it a 5 out of 5. I know Jensen gave it a 4 out of 5. Let me see if there's anyone else. No, that's it.
And you obviously gave it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, and you gave it a 3.5, I think.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Ready for the scare section?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What did you give this for a scare rating?
Honestly, this might surprise you. I give it a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Okay.
Just because I legit did feel dread and creepiness in this movie. And also those three scenes, the two kills, and then that fucking rape scene, just it's tough to watch.
Yeah.
So.
Fair.
Scariest scene. I mean, I gotta go with the rape scene, honestly, because like, did not expect to see that and
Yeah.
to see how graphic it was. Because you're just like watching. It's like it's not quick either. It's like a good like 3 minutes of that, right? So, yeah.
You like you feel for her in that scene too, because like the director calls cut, and then so they have to like fucking move everything around. The guy's still on top of her shirt's still ripped open.
And she's still like, oh yeah, it's okay, huh? Like not like
Yeah.
thinking about like, the after effects of it.
And then yeah, then they have to fucking do it all over again for the second take. Yeah, it's rough.
And then would I survive? I mean, I've never worked on a film set before or been involved with any J-pop stars, so I feel like I would survive, yes.
All right. Fair.
That would you?
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. Maybe a 6. Maybe I'll give it a 6. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 6. Strictly based on like the psychological torture that this person's put through and that we're put through as an audience, like not knowing what's real, what's not. The fucking antagonist, like the dude, the stalker, he is fucking creepy looking, man. Like I know it's animated, but like he's a creepy looking guy.
He
And
is,
like
yeah.
there's these random scenes where it'll do like a close up of him. Cause like when you see his full profile, his eyes look like he's blind, like there's no pupils or anything like that. And then it does a close up view of him, and his eyes are like bulging out of his head, and like you see all the detail in them. It's I don't know, it's fucked up. He's creepy looking for sure. Scariest scene. I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm gonna go back to this guy again. Like, anytime that we kind of see him, especially like at the start, because he kind of comes out of the crowd and you can only see like half of his face, and like you can tell that like he's creepy, like he's got something brewing, right? Like he's the stalker type. So I don't know. I guess that first time that we see him, I'll say. And would I survive? I'm gonna say no.
Really?
All of these deaths come from like out of nowhere. Like, I know obviously I've never worked on a movie set, I've never been in this role, but like if I were and I fucking order a pizza and I get stabbed in the eye out of nowhere, like I'm not stopping that. Like that is just out of nowhere. Like fucking pizza guy comes over and just stabs me in the face.
Yeah, you're done for.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, yeah, no, I don't think I will. If I'm in those shoes.
Right.
All right. That wraps it up. Not sure when we're going to be recording our next episode. Due to you like having a kid and shit, like mistakes, priorities, man. But anyways, my next pick is another movie on Shudder. It came out last year, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, on Shudder it says 2023.
Is it a Rat and Tail?
No, it's not that one. I do want to watch that though.
Me
I really
too.
want to watch that. No, this is a French movie called Infested.
Dude, you're lucky because instead of the third Friday in October, I was gonna watch Infested.
Were you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, 'cause it I saw somebody made it, like they put up a big review of it on Instagram, and I was like, shit, this sounds good. So then I went to Shudder and then I watched the trailer and I was like, damn, this looks fucking wild.
I didn't even
So
watch the trailer. I just read the synopsis and it's like a bunch of poisonous spiders lay a trap, and I was like, okay, I'm sold.
Arachnophobia in 2023. Yeah, so that's going to be my pick whenever we come back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Back-to-back Shudder movies doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't actually. All right, we'll wrap it up. Yeah, if you guys want to catch us on social media, you can find us at a podcast on Elm Street on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Click the link in our bio on Instagram. You'll find links to our TeePublic account where we have our merch. There's also a link to our Patreon account if you wish to support the podcast that way. And there's links to our individual Letterboxd accounts, our Discord server, and anywhere that you can listen to us. Fucking nailed it that time.
Woohoo! Good
I was
job.
editing our last episode and I was fucking killing myself at the end of it because my brain just completely went off. All right.
All right, guys.
So.
We will talk to you whenever.
When we talk to you. Few weeks, a month, I don't know. Something like
We'll see.
that. Yeah. All right. See you later.